Move on to third case of the morning. Trustees of After Health Fund, versus Biondi and O'Brien. Mr. Chisna?
May it please the court. I represent Richard Biondi, the appellant in this case. I'm asking for 10 minutes for my argument in chief and 5 minutes of rebuttal. The first issue that needs to be addressed is whether the common law tort claim, the common law fraud claim, that was the basis for the trial court's judgment is preempted by ERISA. We contend that it was and that it was error for Judge Connelly to not reach the same conclusion.
If you are correct, what remedy is available for an ERISA plan that believes it suffered a significant loss here by paying for medical expenses that it was not obligated to pay for under the plan?
In this particular case, Your Honor, the appropriate remedy would have been a claim against Hazel Biondi, the recipient of the benefits. And in fact, after the trustees actually filed that claim.
The money. And that never even passed through her. It went right to the providers of the services.
Your Honor, under ERISA, the claim would have been appropriate against Mrs. Biondi because she was the beneficiary of those payments. Even though she didn't receive them herself, they were obtained for her. She was the one that benefited from them. It's unfortunate in a case such as this that the appropriate defendant, the defendant against whom the claim should have been brought and solely should have been brought, is, in this case, judgment-proof or uncollectible. But that situation occurs regularly. Hazel Biondi. Yeah. At the time, apparently, that the claim was brought against her, she had suffered significant injuries for which these benefits were paid and was effectively destitute, which is why I understand that she was dismissed from the claim.
So, in other words, are you saying there is no ERISA action that the fund could have brought that would have made the fund whole for these losses?
In this case, as a practical matter, Your Honor, that answer is yes, because the only person that they could properly file a claim under ERISA against was Mrs. Hazel Biondi, and we believe, although it's never been proven, that she did not have sufficient assets to make the plan whole. As I said before, though, unfortunately, there are many instances where claims are able to be made only against a particular party that may be judgment-proof, and that does not necessarily create a separate cause of action against someone else merely because they might be the more collectible party.
Is Mr. Biondi, Richard Biondi, then insulated from any action against him?
Your Honor, I would say the appropriate view isn't that he's insulated. It's that ERISA prevents a claim from being made against him in this instance because it provides only for equitable relief, such as restitution. If Mr. Biondi had actually received these benefits himself, then of course he would be subject to restore to the plan the benefits or the value of the benefits he received. Had he taken some action that the plan could have ultimately enjoined, then of course he's subject to those penalties or sanctions as well. But in this case, he did not receive any benefits.
This is sort of a convoluted system that has, I think, permitted court or moved courts to find that a fraud claim, state law fraud claim like this, is not preempted under ERISA. Because it seems that he's the wrongdoer here. If we accept the facts as were found, we're going to do that. He was the one who held Hazel out to be his wife for 5 years after they were divorced and signed the forms that she was his wife, and they paid benefits based on his representation.
Your Honor, what we've said here, and I believe Judge Connelly actually did find that there was no ill will or no malice or no evil here, that in fact he acted out of what may have been quite proper and good
it was good for Hazel, but it wasn't good for the ERISA.
He acted out of proper motives, but again, the point here, and I think the key issue that this court has repeatedly decided in the past is that based upon the law of preemption and ERISA preemption, you look strictly at what congressional intent was as to what claims could be brought and what remedies are available. And what you're asking, what the plan here is asking for is money damages from an individual from whom they cannot obtain restitution or the other appropriate relief that ERISA provides. That's a legislative function, and apparently the legislature, this court and the Supreme Court has repeatedly held, made a determination that they were going to limit the relief to equitable remedies such as restitution and injunction.
On what theory did the attorneys have a duty to tell the fund about the divorce?
Your Honor, we never got to the stage of establishing a factual record other than through summary judgment. This was not tried. But the theory we would find, or what we would contend, is that based upon the attorney's negotiation of a divorce settlement agreement that specifically obligated Mr. Biondi to provide continued coverage to Hazel under COBRA, that given the circumstances of a non-professional, non-informed person such as Mr. Biondi, and the trial court did held that he did not know what his requirements were to satisfy the plan obligations of notice of his divorce and some of the other requirements, that in that situation attorneys have an obligation when they are binding a client to certain duties in the future to explain those duties and to make sure that the client understands them and can take the appropriate action.
But on what theory did they have a duty to explain COBRA to Mr. Biondi when millions of American workers are expected to figure this out themselves every single day? I mean, you know, COBRA isn't particularly complicated or cryptic. Or maybe you think it is.
Your Honor, if Mr. Biondi had resigned from his job, I believe that it would have been his obligation to determine whether he had COBRA benefits. If he was terminated, I think the practice is fairly common for a human resource department of an employer that terminates an employee
to make sure
they understand COBRA.
No. I'm asking you, on what theory did the attorneys have a duty to explain COBRA to him?
Because they bound him under the terms of the settlement agreement that they negotiated and advised him to sign, to continuing benefits for Hazel for 2 years after the divorce. That's not something that, as a matter of law, she would be entitled to through Mr. Biondi. She would have been able to get it through the plan, but they included that specifically in the divorce settlement agreement. And so when an attorney causes their client to undertake certain obligations in a particular manner, I believe that the law would support a judgment against those attorneys if they did not provide the proper information to the client to satisfy those obligations.
But the district court seems to have found he himself knew that he wasn't complying because he never put his new wife on the plan. So, again, I'm trying to find out how the attorneys could be the cause of the fraud or the cause of the loss.
Well, the attorneys are, in a sense, not the cause of the fraud, but they have to be responsible for the fraud because had they properly advised Mr. Biondi, and Judge Cannelli did find specifically that had he known, he would have taken appropriate action to pay the COBRA premiums. He would have been able to do things and would have indeed done them in a way differently from which he did, had his attorneys properly advised him of what his obligations were. In fact, it's ironic and very telling here that when the plan was finally advised that Mr. Biondi had been divorced for several years and that these benefits may have been paid improperly, they were advised by Mr. Biondi's attorneys who stated specifically that he did not know, he was not told about those obligations.
Didn't he affirmatively say Hazel was his wife after the divorce?
Your Honor, in, I believe, 1995, about 3 years after the divorce, the trial court found that he signed a claim form in which Hazel was identified as his wife. The claim form, however, did not have any other information or any request for benefits. It was a blank claim form that he signed and had his name on.
That's kind of dovetailing on Judge Roebner's questions about the attorneys, that's a pretty damaging statement to his position, isn't it? Why would the attorneys ever be involved in that sort of thing? That's an affirmative act he took, not listing his new wife. By the way, I hope she was healthy during this whole time. But not listing the new wife and affirmatively stating that Hazel was still his wife 3 years after the divorce.
Again,
or
Your Honor,
the attorney's complicit in that.
The attorneys are complicit in that because, as Judge Cannelli did find, had they told him of his obligations, had properly advised him of his obligations, or had they actually undertaken to notify the plan as part of their representation of him in obligating him to this COBRA coverage as part of the settlement of the divorce, at that point the plan would have known of the divorce, and none of this could have occurred. Everything that occurred after the divorce in 1993 would have not been able to occur because the plan would have known of the divorce and Hazel would have been off the plan or she would have been under COBRA.
Mr. DiGiar.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, there should be no mistake here that Mr. Biondi was the wrongdoer. He lied affirmatively to the fund in a February 21st, 1997 claim form that Hazel was still his wife. And then he took the position at trial that he had not signed that form, and the court found that that was untrue. The court found that Mr. Biondi acted with the intent to cause the fund to rely to its detriment and to continue to cover Hazel, and that is, in fact, what happened.
Let me just ask you this. What is state law requiring plans to cover ex-spouses for 5 years be preempted by ERISA?
If there were a substantive state law dictating to the fund that they had to maintain a certain eligibility, yes, that would be preempted, but that is not what is going on here. The purpose of ERISA preemption is to prevent a state from dictating to a fund how to operate, what benefits to provide, who should be eligible for those benefits. That is not what is going on in this case. In this case, plan trustees are suing a tortfeasor for causing harm to the fund, for causing loss to the fund. As the Supreme Court explained, the purpose of ERISA preemption is to prevent a fund from having to operate differently in different states, from having to provide a certain fiduciary standard in one state versus another, or certain benefits in one state versus another. Here, there's nothing as a result of this judgment against Mr. Biondi that requires the fund to operate differently in the state of Illinois than it would, say, in the state of New York or the state of California.
Now, you could have sued Hazel under ERISA for reimbursement.
Your Honor, we did originally sue Hazel. Counsel is correct. We determined that Hazel was judgment-proof, and we did not proceed against her. I'm not sure, since she did not receive the benefits herself, that we would have prevailed in a restitution claim against her.
Well, she participated in the fraud by submitting claims when she knew she wasn't the wife.
Your Honor, we did not sufficiently explore that or proceed against that claim against Hazel Biondi. But what is not in doubt is that Mr. Biondi, a participant in the fund, did commit fraud. The fraud finding is not challenged on appeal. All that counsel for Mr. Biondi is contending is that that fraud finding is preempted. So there's no dispute that he is a wrongdoer here. In fact, and what he is in essence asking is that he be allowed to walk away scot-free, that the district court found that there was no ERISA claim that can stand against Mr. Biondi, and now Mr. Biondi is contending that there should be no remedy against him at all. Such a preemption determination would be adverse to the purposes of ERISA, since it would prevent funds, not only this fund, but all funds, from having a means to combat this type of fraud, which is not an uncommon type of fraud. There are millions of people in this country who lack health insurance, and there are some among them who will commit fraud to obtain health insurance for themselves or for others. And funds with hundreds of thousands of participants and beneficiaries need a way to combat this type of fraud. This is money that Mr. Biondi deprived the fund of that would have gone to pay the benefits of deserving participants and beneficiaries. ERISA addresses certain things. It addresses fiduciary standards. It addresses vesting rules, minimum funding rules. It has nothing whatsoever to say about the issue in this case, where plan trustees are suing a defendant for causing the fund to make payments to someone who is not eligible for them. As far as I'm aware, there's no case where the plan trustees or the plaintiffs suing defendants who've caused the fund harm, where any court has found that there has been preemption. The case most directly on point, of course, is the Second Circuit's Geller case, where exactly like here, the plan trustees sued defendants who caused the plan to improperly make payments to someone who was not eligible, and the Second Circuit there found that there was no preemption. The cases that Biondi relies on are all cases where you have participants or beneficiaries suing a plan, challenging how the plan is operated or seeking benefits. Those types of cases fall into the category of preemption cases that the Supreme Court has identified as using state law as an alternative to existing ERISA remedies. Here, by contrast, as the district court found, there is no alternative ERISA remedy. State law is the only way the fund has to proceed against Mr. Biondi. This is also not a case where resolution of the state claim requires interpretation or application of plan terms. There are only two even conceivably relevant terms that could be relevant in this case, one that ex-spouses are not eligible for benefits, and the other that participants need to notify the fund of a divorce. Neither of those terms are in dispute. Neither requires interpretation. Indeed, the fact that ex-spouses are not eligible for benefits is simply a background fact, just like the fact in the Geller case that the girlfriend of the defendant in that case was ineligible for benefits under the terms of that plan. Moreover, the district, as to the other term, that participants need to inform the plan of a divorce, the district court expressly found Mr. Biondi committed fraud without even finding that Mr. Biondi was aware of that term. In fact, the district court expressly found that Mr. Biondi was probably not aware of that term. And that makes sense because the fund relied on Mr. Biondi to inform it of the status of his dependents. And so by intentionally not informing the fund of the divorce with the intent that the fund would rely, Mr. Biondi committed fraud, regardless of whether or not there was a plan term that would have additionally required him to inform the fund of the divorce. The Supreme Court has made clear that there's a strong presumption against preemption in ERISA cases. And that presumption is particularly strong as here, where we're talking about a traditional state law of general application. The overarching fact is that the fraud claim by the plan trustees did not affect how the plan operates, that this was not an alternative claim to existing ERISA remedies. What was breached here was not a plan term, but was state law duty by Mr. Biondi not to commit fraud, a duty that is imposed on every member of society. And for those reasons, there is no preemption. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Cohn.
May it please the Court, good morning, Your Honors. Three things that I would like to emphasize. First, there is no case that Mr. Biondi cites to Your Honors that supports his position. Illinois law is very clear in an attorney malpractice context when there's an independent act of fraud, as there was here, despite alleged negligence by an attorney, the fraudfeasor cannot be indemnified with respect to the consequences of his action. That's in the Goldstein case and the Metis case, and there is no case that's been cited by Mr. Biondi that all supports his position. Those cases have a distinct and obvious public policy rationale in that fraud feasors should not be indemnified. This was an independent act of fraud. The findings of Judge Cannelli clearly demonstrate that the attorneys had nothing to do with the fraud that was committed, and the fraud was very, very, very simple. It was very simple. It was very obvious. It was on a claim form, as Judge Cannelli held. He designated his Hazel Biondi as his wife. He signed the form, and then he compounded the fraud at trial by disputing that this was his signature, and Judge Cannelli appropriately found that it was his signature.
Was that form sometime later? I have a recollection that it seemed to be dated 2 or 3 years after the divorce. I could be wrong.
It was dated many years after the divorce.
Why was that? What wouldn't you have to sign a form right off?
Well, this was a claim form for subsequent benefits, I believe, but the divorce settlement agreement was in 1993, and the claim form at issue, Exhibit 89, was in 1997. So Your Honor's correct. It was many years later.
But that would have been when she had whatever treatment she had or something?
I believe so, Your Honor. And so in our view, Your Honors, there is no legal basis for holding the attorneys in. There is no public policy basis. And as a matter of fact, the facts are unequivocal, and Judge Cannelli appropriately held that there was an independent act of fraud, and Mr. Biondi had the intent and the motivation to commit fraud, and the circumstantial evidence in terms of his new wife is just more demonstration that the fraud was committed. So we would respectfully submit, Your Honors, that summary judgment in favor of the attorneys was appropriate.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Patricia? You have 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Despite the concern that the court expresses about how the fund may end up without a recovery here, I would respectfully submit that the only basis for the claim that is raised by the fund is the relationship between the plan and Mr. Biondi that arises solely, or the fund and Mr. Biondi that arises solely out of the plan. As a result, it's preempted under Pilot Life Insurance versus Detto and Jass versus Prudential, Collins versus Rothman Prina, courts, decisions that this court has reached on that issue. To not regard this as a preempted claim would turn that whole line of cases just totally on its head. Mr. Biondi didn't deprive the fund of the money. Hazel Biondi did. Hazel Biondi was the proper defendant under ERISA, and the fact that she may have been judgment-proof does not operate to shift the burden for money damages to a person against whom money damages are not provided for under ERISA, and where the claim should be preempted.
I assume there had to be some sort of understanding between him and her about submitting this form.
Your Honor, there's
that. When she submitted a claim, was she even injured or something? What happened?
She had various medical problems, stroke, heart attack, et cetera. She was living in California at the time, Your Honor. The record is not, there's no record as to what interactions they had at the time.
Other than the fact that he signed this form.
He signed a form. There was no indication. This form came from the AFTRA fund documents, and as I say, there was no indication on the form as to what benefits were being applied for. It was a blank form with his name, his signature, and the name of Hazel Biondi, and the notation wife. No benefits asked for specifically, no indication of treatments or anything else. It was a blank form. As to the attorney's claim, the best analogy I could draw would be the current Enron situation. If Enron had gone to its attorneys and asked them to provide a document retention program for them,
and the attorneys didn't tell them not to shred documents that may be the subject of an SEC or a court or attorney general investigation, and they go ahead and shred documents, I believe that they may very well have a claim against their attorneys for not telling them that this is conduct that they should not engage in, or for not telling them that there are certain record retention programs that should be implemented. The fact
really
that they did it in
a letter that says they told them to shred them. They just want somebody else to.
Well, that's
take
a
rap, huh?
That's a little bit more extreme, Your Honor. But here the key is that, as the attorneys themselves admitted in their letter to the fund, Mr. Biondi was not advised of his obligations under ERISA. In order to get the COBRA benefits. And in fact, the attorneys themselves said that he would be willing to pay the COBRA premiums in order to basically, you know, put things on an even keel. But the admission there was Mr. Biondi didn't know. In that situation, the attorneys have superior knowledge, and they are obligated to tell him what his duties are and to make sure that he is operating in a fully informed manner. As Judge Pinelli said, he would have complied with the requirements had he known.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Case will be taken under advisement.